Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. Billy the Kid is back on MGM Plus's trail with Season 2 on Sunday night. It's the latest work from a mastermind of historical scripted series, Michael Hirst. And Michael joins me next in an internet radio exclusive. The new avenues YouTube talent have to become TV talent keep on coming. Today we showcase Savio TV, out to showcase rising multicultural YouTube content makers. Here, Chief Executive Aziz Rahmatulla, next half hour. True Crime gets a macabre turn from Peacock on John Carpenter's Suburban Screams. Executive producer and director Jordan Roberts turns our way later this hour, and an hour from now. Also ahead, SAG-AFTRA and AMPTP get ready to rumble again, Prime Video preps fallout, and our brand new classic trivia question with five, count them five, wonderful prizes in play. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio. I present on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network, the Zencaster Creator Network, and more than 40 other great podcast destinations. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Our first half hour today is brought to you by Laird Superfood, plant-based coffee creamers, and other products that fuel you from sunrise to sunset. 61 degrees at the top of the hour, and we welcome you on this Monday afternoon to a 90-minute super edition of the program all about TV's current and future. Some wonderful guests coming away over the next hour and a half, and we invite you to be part of the program. It's so simple. Just pick up the phone and dial in, and when you do, you use this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anyway you're catching us across the country or around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, or TuneIn Radio. And we have our chat room and business as well for you. It's SimonApple04 by name, so use it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And while the program is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, or TuneIn screen. Follow the instructions. Other people can be live with you. Michael Hirst from Billy the Kid on MGM Plus, we expect to have him joining us right after these news notes. The effort to end more than 100 days of strike by Screen Actors Guild, AFTRA, and get scripted TV content back in content-producing mode resumes tomorrow around this hour. SAG-AFTRA officials are due to meet with TV and Film Producers Alliance executives, that's AMPTP, in Los Angeles, and try again to reach a new multi-year agreement. The big issues? Residuals for mega content services and artificial intelligence parameters. What remains unclear? Will SAG-AFTRA take down its proposal for a per-subscriber payment plan? Observers say that subject led to a breakdown in negotiations between the two organizations week before last. Again, the negotiations resume tomorrow afternoon our time, late morning, early afternoon, Pacific time. Prime Video's next shot at a hit fictional series version of a popular video game will be Fallout. Westwood creator producers Jonathan Nolan and Lisa Joy will executive produce the series depicting a post-catastrophe Los Angeles. Fallout will debut April 12th. With Walton Goggins, Kyle MacLachlan, Serena Chodahe, Michael Emerson, and Leslie Uggams among the co-stars. And now quickies, independent studio A24 is developing The Girlfriends, a scripted TV version of the popular true crime genre podcast. Three-part docuseries House of Kardashian will arrive on Peacock November 16th. NAB Show New York opens its 2023 edition tomorrow at the Javits Center. The National Association of Broadcasters run event continues through Thursday afternoon. And the LIV Golf Tour is now pursuing a TV coverage contract for first-round play of its 2024 event, whether or not they do merge with the PGA Tour by the end of the year. Right now, opening round Friday action runs on YouTube, the CW app, and other online outlets. And that is news notes for today. And now joining me live from England and Internet Radio Exclusive, the creator, executive producer, and showrunner, Billy the Kid, now on Sunday nights on MGM+, the award winner, Michael Hirst. Michael, it is a pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to talk to you.
Same here, Michael. After so many years depicting things like the Tudors and Vikings, why did you decide to make an American subject, Billy the Kid, a topic of a television series?
Well, it's actually quite simple, and because for me it's a love story, because when I was a kid growing up in the north of England, which is as far away from New Mexico as you could get, I was obsessed. I was fascinated by Billy the Kid, and I must have read about him in some comics or something, but I was fascinated. And so I had a couple of miles to walk to school through woods and across meadows, and I always thought I was riding a white horse and it was being pursued by the posse, and I was Billy the Kid. So when Michael Wright of MGM said, Michael, what would you like to do next? And I said, well, you know, I'd like to do Western. Westerns have always fascinated me. And I'd like to do Billy the Kid. So rather surprisingly, he agreed. And so I started to dig into the research.
And how much research did you do? And how did it compare to the amount of research you did on Vikings, on Vikings Valhalla, the Tudors, the Borgias, Elizabeth, and all the other historical TV you've done?
It's difficult to say. Everything I do starts life as a piece of research. So, you know, and often I have a historical researcher to help me as well. But in this case, in Billy, I did it myself. And funnily enough, there's not a huge amount that's written about Billy, and a lot of it is suspect anyway, especially Pat Garrett's account. But there were a couple of accounts that were written by people who'd ridden with Billy, people who knew Billy. So I drilled down on those accounts and tended to trust them more than others. So really, the answer is that it's a process. It starts with research, and then I start to write, and then it's not a documentary, it's a drama, so I have to make it dramatic. I have to choose to and select the most dramatic and the most interesting parts of Billy's short life. But actually, going back to your first question, I have to say, I'm English, but I love America, and at university I did English and American studies, and, you know, like my favorite book's Moby Dick. But so I feel at home with American subjects. It's not foreign to me. I mean, New Mexico is pretty foreign, but America isn't foreign. So I felt at home doing the research. But research often comes up with unexpected results. And one of the unexpected things was how much I really got to like Billy. And how different he was from the myth that's woven around him. And the idea that he was a psychopathic killer or anything like that is totally untrue. So it was wonderful for me, as I'd hero-worshipped him when I was a boy, to be able to prove that he was worth, to some extent, hero-worshipping.
What makes someone like Billy the Kid likable? And you're not the only, by the way, person who tried to make Billy the Kid likable on television. Back in 1960, NBC, through Universal Television, did a series called The Tall Man, which starred Clu Gallagher, the former star of the Virginia, he passed away last year, who played Billy the Kid. And it talked about his friendship with Pat Garrett, played by Barry Sullivan, very distinguished actor.
Yeah.
The show ran 2 years on NBC, 1960-62. And the same thing happened. They tried to make, while Billy and Pat were sometimes at odds with each other, they were usually on the same side when it came to taming the Wild West.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I wanted people, an audience, to know more about Billy, who he was, where he came from. You know, most people don't know that he was an Irish immigrant, that his parents were Irish and came to America, you know, during the famine, and tried to get jobs in New York. There were no more jobs in New York, and the American government offered people like them good jobs and good housing if they went west. And of course, that was a lie. They went west, and there was no good housing. There were no jobs. It was a very, very, still a very primitive society and world where the railroad hadn't even reached in the 1860s, a very violent country. Billy's mother was a devout Catholic, also told him stories when he was growing up, and she gave him his moral compass. He wasn't a Catholic, he wasn't a practicing Catholic, but he had a very strong moral sense, and that moral sense never deserted him. He was also extremely sensitive, empathetic. Being Irish, he stood up for the underdog, so He often stood up for Mexicans. He had Mexican friends. He fell in love with a Mexican girl. So whichever way I looked at it, I kind of liked him. I was empathetic to him. He was against the corrupt practices of American farmers and landowners who were forcing Mexicans off their land. And so I liked him, and he always said he was more sinned against than sinning. His mother and his father and his brother died. He had a hard life. He fell in with Jesse Evans, who was an outlaw, slightly older than he was, and Jesse Evans looked rather cool. So he kind of fell in with Jesse for a while, but he never wanted to be an outlaw. He wanted to go straight. He wanted to have a decent life. He wanted to have an ordinary life, and it was always denied him.
Mm-hmm. Billy the Kid is now in Season 2 on MGM+. New episodes run on Sunday nights. And we are talking with the executive producer, the creator, and the showrunner, the award winner, Michael Hirst, whose credits include The Tudors on Showtime, Vikings on the History Channel, and Vikings the Holiday Game, its final season on Netflix. And by the way, MGM Plus is available not only on cable, but satellite, but it's also available in some cases on smart TV sets, smart devices, and multi-channel bundles. Michael joins us live from England this half hour. It's prime time his time, mid-afternoon our time. Simon Abbott with you live from New York, 61 degrees at the top of the hour here in the Big Apple. And we are delighted to have Michael with us for his first time here on Smart Beat Televised. We want to hear from you, too. Give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use that chat room, SimonApple04 by name. First of three episodes of the program covering TV's current and future coming your way this final full week of October 2023. We'll have another one for you on Thursday, another one on Friday at this very hour, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. Tune in live on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, TuneIn Radio. Coming up in our next half hour, we'll showcase a new network that just started called Savio TV. It deals with new creations from YouTube creators. We will have the chief executive of that service. That is Aziz Rahmatullah will be with us live from Los Angeles. And finally, at the top of the hour, we'll be joined by Jordan Roberts, the executive producer and director with the famed John Carpenter of the new Peacock series, John Carpenter's Suburban Screams. That's all coming your way over the next 90 minutes right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Michael, how is season two so far? We're talking the first three episodes. How does that build up from what you did with season one?
Well, I think that season one in some ways was the preparation for season two, because if you study Billy's life, then the Lincoln County War was the central most eventful period in his life, and where he became famous because of what the extraordinary things he did and how terrible and violent that war was. And so I wanted the audience to know about Billy before he got involved in that war and before he took up a leadership role in that war. And I think that, so in a way, season two is much more of a real Western. I mean, you know, it's edgier, it's darker, it's violent, because it was a violent time. And I think the whole production has stepped up. I think I love the cast. I love the crew. It's not an easy shoot because we have no studio. We're on set all the time. We're moving around all the time. I mean, we're on location all the time. We're moving around all the time. It's hard to shoot it because you're doing sort of buffalo stampedes or horse stampedes, whatever. You know, I throw lots of spanners in the works, and I throw lots of challenges out to production, and they always meet them. And I would say that the production values, that the shows in season two are amazing. I am so proud. I am so thrilled by what it looks like now, what the passion of it, the drama of it, the reality of it. As I say, I just think we've stepped up a number of gears.
Where do you film the series?
Calgary in Canada, which is cowboy country.
More and more, Canada is becoming the place to shoot series for American television, whether it's Vancouver, Montreal, Toronto, and, yeah, Nova, we've had some shows in Nova Scotia lately. And like I said, Calgary is perfect, you know, Western weather.
Well, a lot of Westerns were shot in Calgary, going back a long way. And you can still see the old townships that you'd recognize from 1,000 old cowboy movies. So it's perfect. But from our point of view, from the cast point of view, what was brilliant about it is we had a lot of young actors. You know, people didn't live very long in Lincoln County at that time. They were shot dead, you know. And so we cast a lot of young men. Our leads, Tom Blythe, the lead, plays Billy, is very young. The people around him are very young. And some of them hadn't ridden at all. They hadn't ridden horses. And they go to Calgary. They're in a Western. They have to ride in stampedes. They have to ride. They have to gallop everywhere. And what they did was to put a lot of the cowboys who live and work in Calgary on the payroll. So they were with our actors. They were looking after our actors in all these scenes, you know. And it was once. Can you imagine if you're a young actor, a young guy, that you are actually working beside real cowboys? I mean, it's a fantasy, and it's wonderful. So Calgary is a kind of natural place that you would shoot a Western, actually, although we didn't use any of the old sets. We didn't use any of it because the West, when Billy got there, wasn't like that. It was still primitive, log cabins, poverty, small farms. So this is a slightly new kind of Western. It's an Aboriginal Western. It's an early Western. And that's one of the distinguishing features, I think, of our show.
What made Tom Blythe the Billy the Kid for you? This is the person
I want to bring my
program to life, that character to life.
Yeah, well, we looked at, tested something like 400 actors for the role. We assumed early on that, you know, it would probably be an American who would play Billy. Tom Blythe was just out of acting college. He threw his hat in the ring. It didn't hurt him that he actually looked quite like the picture of Billy we've all seen. But still, you know, he had to jump through a lot of hoops. But he was, you know, for me, he was always in the reckoning because of his sensitivity, because he looked very sensitive. He is very sensitive. He was the Billy that I was looking for, not the neurotic pathological killer. I was looking for an intelligent, sensitive guy. But I still kind of threw rocks in his way because, you know, I would suddenly say, look, I've just read that Billy could play the guitar and sing beautifully. You know, how are you going to deal with that? And like 3 days later, Tom would send me a tape of him playing the guitar and singing beautifully. So I kept thinking, well, maybe this is the guy. Maybe this is fate. Maybe he's fated to do this. And you can't, at a certain point, you go with your gut. You go with your instinct. And I thought he was perfect. And he is perfect. He's an absolutely wonderful Billy.
How has he grown in the role?
He's matured very quickly as an actor. Partly because the role is so challenging. I mean, it's very physical. You have to do lots of physical things. It's not just riding. It's learning to shoot. It's, you know, loads of physical things. But it's emotionally challenging, too. It's about a young man who grows up very quickly. He's only 19 when he gets to Lincoln County. So in some ways, he's a kid, but he's already an adult. I mean, he's making huge decisions, life and death decisions. You know, he's leading, these guys in shootouts. And so, you know, Tom has got to be convincing in all those things. He's got to be convincing as a rider, as a shooter, and as an adult, and he's embraced it completely. He has grown completely into the role, and now, of course, he's also the lead in a new big movie. So.
Tom Blythe is Billy the Kid in the series now running Sunday nights on MGM Plus, formerly known as FX, now in season 2. We're speaking with the award-winning series creator, executive producer, and showrunner of Billy the Kid, Michael Hirst. He joins us live from England this half hour in an exclusive interview here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Simon Abbott with you from the other side of the Atlantic, Nueva York, where currently it's 61 degrees, coming toward the bottom of the hour. If you have a question or comment on remaining minutes with Michael, make that call. Here's that number, 646-652-2906. Or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. And coming up near the top of the hour, we've got our new classic trivia question with 5 prizes in play. And they all could be yours if you are the first to email the correct answer. We'll have that question for you coming up near the top of the hour. Michael, in doing your research, did you have a chance to see some of the classic television shows with Western flavor like Gunsmoke or The Life and Legend of Wyatt Earp, which your show sort of models a little bit because it features a character that grows and is sort of serialized, that Hugh O'Brien did as Wyatt Earp, or Maverick, or Cheyenne, or any of the other great Westerns that television produced in the 50s and 60s.
I remember seeing Rawhide when I was a kid, and I dipped in and out of Westerns, so, I can't remember all the Westerns I've seen, but I would say as a principle, and this may seem strange to people, but I don't watch other people's representations of things that I'm writing. I don't want to be influenced, whether it's Bonnie and Clyde or whatever it is. I don't want to be held to account because I've been influenced or I don't actually watch that much. I'm immersed in my own mind and my own world, and I'm trying to create something. Although, of course, subconsciously, you are totally influenced by the things you've seen. I mean, who could get away from the influence of Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid? You know, who could get away from John Ford's Westerns? You can't do it. But I try, I'm influenced, but I try and forget the influence. I try to be original. And authentic.
Before we move on, you mentioned Rawhide, one of my favorite Westerns. And like yours, it's very rugged. It's very ambitious. It deals with cattlemen on a cattle trail. And what was very interesting is that they also sort of had the kind of plot, they called them incidents, at least when they started, where you would have the Clint Eastwood character, the Eric Fleming character, Gil Favor trail boss, sort of get into all these unique predicaments along the way of trying to get their cattle from the start of their route to the other, to the end.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. Well, I remember that. I guess now that storytelling in TV shows is slightly more sophisticated, that it's not like a whole series of little movies. It's telling a long-form story, which is the great value of TV shows that, as against movies. In movies, character is revealed very quickly because you don't have the time to develop. In TV shows, you've got the time to develop characters, to develop storylines, and the storylines can be quite complex. They can be things that aren't resolved immediately, but could be, I'm carrying over storylines from season 1 into season 2 because I've thought them through, and maybe even into season 3. Pat Garrett's going to be a big, big character, but for a while he's been waiting in the wings. So I think, this has been the age of television drama, the golden age of television drama in the last, 15 years, 20 years. And I'm happy that happened on my watch, and I like writing TV drama. I like writing these complex, interconnected storylines. It's fun, actually.
With all the historical series that you've done, going back to the Borgias and the Tudors and Vikings and so on, have you come up as a writer-producer with certain ground rules about how do you produce, how do you write, how do you develop a series of this nature?
Well, my only ground rules really is that I begin with historical research, and as far as possible, I try to stick to what is true and authentic. But at the same time, I'm a dramatist, so if I start with a historical fact or something that's historically recorded, I can use that as the basis of a drama. So I can always defend myself, or I hope I can defend myself from any charges that what I write is not historically accurate. Indeed, I don't believe in historical accuracy because historians themselves all disagree about what actually happened and what is historically accurate. But I do want to be as authentic as possible. And I love writing about different historical periods. I love jumping into research about, could be the Ottoman Empire or Vikings. I mean, I did Vikings in a way because I love the idea of paganism. I wanted to find out more about paganism. You know, and that was partly the reason I did it. It was to explain to people what paganism actually was, because most of us, our ancestors were pagans. So I think it's probably a good thing to know where we came from.
Mm-hmm. We'll end on this. In the back of your mind, before you say sayonara to television, is there still one more piece of history or one more historical person that you would like to make a television series out of?
Well, the truth is that there are lots. I mean, and I have written about many other historical characters and many other epochs that, you know, haven't made it to screen. Often because they're very expensive, you know, and it takes courage for producers to do them. So I have no complaints at all. In fact, I wrote movies before I started writing TV series, and like 90%, 99% probably of the movie scripts you write never get made. I've been so lucky. I mean, I wrote 89 episodes of Vikings. I mean, that's almost unheard of, you know, and I'm really proud of that.
Tom Blyce plays Billy the Kid on the series now in season 2 on MGM Plus. The next episode is this coming Sunday night. Check your local listings for MGM Plus is available in your area on cable and satellite, also on smart TV sets, smart devices, and multi-channel bundles. More details about the series and the service online, go to www.mgmplus.com. That's www.mgmplus.com. Be the Kid, next episode, this coming Sunday night. Michael Hirst, thank you very, very much for a wonderful half hour with you. Congratulations on season 2. Hopefully many more to come, and we would love to have you back anytime. It has been a terrific pleasure having you on.
Thank you so much. I've enjoyed it. Thank you. Thank you.
Same here, Michael.
Bye.
Take care. All the greatest to you.
Yeah. Bye. Thank you.
Michael Hirst from Billy the Kid joining us live in prime time, England time. More tomorrow be televised coming up, but first, let's give you some words from a great sponsor, Laird Superfood. Are you ready to feel more energized, focused, and supported? Go to LairdSuperfood.com and add nourishing plant-based foods to fuel you from sunrise to sunset. Use the promo code TELEVISE at checkout to save 15% off your purchase today. If you're looking for a better coffee experience, for example, try out Laird Superfood Creamers. They're produced from high-quality, all-natural ingredients, sustainably sourced, and whole food all the way. There's no artificial flavors, colors, or additives. So ramp up your energy and focus today with Laird Superfood Creamers. They are available at LairdSuperfood.com. Remember, you save 15% off your purchase when you use the promo code TELEVISE, T-E-L-E-V-I-S-E-D, at checkout. When we come back, we will get into the world of YouTube creators getting more involved with television with a service called Savio TV. We will have the chief executive, Aziz Ramtula, joining us live next half hour from Los Angeles. Plus, our new classic trivia question with 5 prizes in play. Keep your trivia brains ready because you could be our next trivia winner. That's all coming up after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. You'll see the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, and tune.com. Together, reach over 90 million listeners around the world every month and growing. If you're in for some entertaining radio or audio, check out Take 2 Radio today, 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. That's Take 2 Radio today, 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. It's all about the world of daytime dramas right here on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, best VTR 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to our second half hour of this 90-minute edition of Tomorrow Be Televised. This half hour is brought to you by BlendJet, the portable blender letting you make fresh smoothies, shakes, or mixed drinks on the go wherever you go. Thanks for coming back with us, and welcome to those of you just joining us at the bottom of the hour. 61 degrees at that bottom here in New York, beginning of what we expect will be a big sunny stretch that will reach 75 degrees or more by the end of the week. Tommy Abbott, I'm with you live from the Big Apple. Happy you're aboard. We have more great guests coming to you over the next 60 minutes. We invite you to be part of the program. It's so simple. Pick up the phone, dial in 646-652-2906. Or use that chat room, SimonApple04 by name. And stay tuned. We have a brand new classic trivia question for you coming up before the top of the hour. And when we pose it, you can win up to five. That's right, five prizes for you if you are first with the correct answer. If you've been listening to this program the last couple of weeks, you know that there is a big movement toward having YouTube creators become TV series creators. We talked recently about Viral Nation. It's an organization that is working with YouTube creators to get their series dreams reality. There's the Dude Perfect channel that we hope to have on, by the way, later this week. That is now running on smart TV sets and devices. And now there is Savio TV, which also is out to have YouTube creators become TV series creators. Joining us live from Los Angeles is the chief executive of Savio TV. We welcome in Aziz Ramatula. Aziz, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Simon. Glad to be here. And by the way, fascinating interview. That was amazing. I'm a big Billy the Kid fan as well. So love the history things that you had there.
It is a pleasure. Awesome. Michael is absolutely wonderful. I've been a big fan of his work from the Tutors on Down and or on Up. And I was really thrilled that we could have him on the program. I hope we have him back again soon. He is really, really dynamite. And Billy the Kid, by the way, like you said, looks absolutely super. So tell us about, first, we're going to get to Savio TV. Why do you think we are seeing in recent weeks and months YouTube creators wanting to become television creators, put their own TV series on the map?
Yeah, you know, the reason being is, and we noticed this a couple of years ago, and Savio, by the way, what we do is we basically enable, we're a company that has technology services that enable ad-supported streaming TV. So we saw the need in the marketplace, and as you're seeing from other companies, that you have these amazing creators who are essentially our present-day celebrities, right? They're outshining some of these much bigger Hollywood names, and they're interested in getting out of the box that Instagram has put them in, or the box that YouTube has put them in. And so what we're finding, this is exactly what we're solving for, is what we're finding is they're interested in having a bigger voice in streaming TV, and we're enabling that. So to answer your question, it's they're trying to get out of the box that they've been put in, whether it is the different platforms or the formats, and they just want to extend their creativity and build their brands versus build YouTube, build Instagram, and build Facebook.
So what is Savio TV like? Give us the 10 yards about the kind of programming people can see when they watch it, and where can they watch it in terms of smart TV set and smart device carriage?
You know, in the current world that we're dealing with, there's not enough positivity. And so what Savio TV aims to do is bringing a lot of positive programming ideas, self-help programming to the marketplace. And so that really is our motive. Our motive is to bring diverse influencers. And these are, if you look at stats, not only is the U.S. population continuing to be diverse, more than 50% of population and growing within the next 2 years, but if you look at streaming TV specifically and the diversity that brings in terms of viewership. And so Savio TV is really tapping into that. It's tapping into these diverse influencers who really are trying to bring a positive message to a broader ecosystem. And by the way, it's a global ecosystem. Much like your radio show, we're not, you know, they don't want to be confined to geo areas. And so this is the opportunity for them to have a global issue. And we are enabling that. Today, you can get Sabio TV through Android, your Android phone. You can get it on Android-enabled smart TVs. And by the end of this year, we expect to be on enabled on all platforms, including iOS, Samsung, Vizio, LG, and the rest of them. So we're really, you know, we just launched Sabio TV as a beta. Really, it's only been a few weeks. Already seen some great response, and we really hope to expand that out to full reach by the end of the year.
Expand upon that response. What are people telling you when they see the programming? What kind of programming do they like? How uplifting in their mind is it?
Well, I think we're getting – what's interesting is we're getting response from both the creators and the actual people watching. And the creators are saying to us, this is exactly what the type of platform I'm looking for that allows me to – really have a voice. And then from the consumer perspective, from the viewership perspective, it's, like I said, it's early days. We're doing a lot of testing. What they're telling us is in this day and age, especially with everything going on in the world and coming off of the challenges of COVID, they need some uplifting. They want to be inspired. They don't want to get trapped into the existing confines of, you know, trash TV where people pull each other down. They want to watch something that just is about learning and discovering and excitement and all in a positive note. So, you know, that's really what we keep hearing over and over again.
Mm-hmm. Again, if you have a question or comment for our guests this half hour, that's Aziz Rahmatullah from Sabio TV, the chief executive of that service, now running, as you said, on TV sets with the Android TV operating system, others to come, as well as other smart TV devices. Make that call. The number you use is 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. That number is good anywhere you're catching us with the country around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, or TuneIn Radio, or get into the chat room. Very easy to do. Just go to SimonApple04. That's the room. And you go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. SimonApple04, that's the name of the chat room. And it's at blogtalkradio.com/televised. What YouTube creators are you working with?
We're working with a host of them. Most recently we signed, you know, I should have had this information on top, but we just recently signed a couple of new creators I can't talk about just yet. But we have a couple of key creators who have done shows, including My Happy Place, which is a show that is focused in on a mom who is essentially her daughter had a form of cancer. She looked at decorating her home as a way, her room as a way of actually giving her comfort. And now she's taking that message and that visibility and decorating other homes of rooms of kids who are terminally ill. And so it is My Happy Place. It's a show that we're really proud of. And we have a few different ones that we're finding. Ami Desai is one of our key creators. Ami Desai is a guest host on Today Show most frequently, regularly, and she is a diverse South Asian influencer who really is bringing this idea of style, fashion, and self-help. In fact, the reason Ami motivated us to take a different direction with Sabio TV because in her experience, she said to us that a lot of women were coming to her. And in one instance, one of her friends asked her about help and how to identify good doctors because she was recently diagnosed with breast cancer. And so Ami said to us that there's such a need in the marketplace for information and knowledge, and especially as it relates to all groups, but especially as it relates to women audiences who have dealt with a disproportionate amount of challenges associated with COVID. And so that really is kind of, you know, she's one of our key influencers amongst other ones that are really excited about.
In the press release that showcased this, Aziz, in fact, Ami Desai said this: "This is the first step of an industry shift to put creators first, and I'm excited to embark on this new era focused on reaching audiences through creativity and inclusivity." How do you do that? How do you, A, put creators first, and especially, B, put people of color who create first?
Well, I think it's just natural. I think the audiences, first of all, is we're not limiting who gets on the platform. We're opening the platform to all creators. That's the first step. And there's no real kind of gatekeepers that are deciding what people are watching or not. And it's, you know, just organically from a perspective of, like, you know, in terms of the the content that they want to produce, they're coming to us. And so what's happening is we're not simply regurgitating the content from YouTube or some of their channels. What we're doing is we have a team led by Joe Ochoa, who is our VP of content, and Charlie Avera and Sergio Torres, who's all part of that group. And they basically work with these content creators and think of additional ideas that we pitch them. And so we say to them, listen, we get this is what you have done on YouTube. This is what you've done on Instagram. We'd love to pitch this idea to you. And so they essentially take some of these ideas and then they run with it. But it's up to them. And they really don't have guardrails around them. It's simply about, you know, how do you kind of help this kind of creative process? And that's really what we're doing overall. And so that's how we get diversity and inclusivity from the content creators. And then when it comes to the brands, there are great brands we get to work with, including we just recently signed a deal with a agency that is really leading the charge on diversity, Media Hub, and they were excited about what we're doing with some of these creators, and we literally are partnering up with them very closely to then foster this ecosystem. And so including, you know, we're fortunate to work with great brands like the GMs of the world. And so there's some great brands that are really interested in being forward-thinking as it relates to creating and promoting a diverse ecosystem, and we're really propelling our technology to do that. Sorry,
finish your thought because I jumped in a little bit.
No, I said sometimes I get going and I can't stop because we're just super excited about what's going on. So my apologies on that.
No need for apologize. How ambitious are the pitches getting, both from the YouTube creators and from the brands or advertisers you're working with? Are they getting into scripted or semi-scripted material as well as more ambitious lifestyle or comedy or other types of even offbeat programming?
Right now we're staying with unscripted. Going with, you know, unscripted lifestyle is really our focus today. We do believe there's going to be an opportunity down the road to get further into scripted components of, you know, of content. But right now, there's a lot of receptivity to unscripted content within certain categories. So, for example, lifestyle, self-help, you know, fitness, things along those lines, cooking. That's really the kind of the areas we're seeing. I personally would like to also kind of move us into and be able to provide is mental health. I think there's a big need in the marketplace today overall for, you know, more resources around mental health and talking about mental health and how do you uplift people. And that's really, you know, we see an opportunity across the board. But from a brand perspective, they're very interested in the unscripted, but in certain key categories overall.
Savio TV is among the new programming services that is becoming a new haven for YouTube creators to do their thing in television. We are speaking with the chief executive of the service, Aziz Rahantula, and he joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour right here on Tumwabi Televised. Again, Savio TV currently running on TV sets that have the Android operating system, and other smart TV sets and devices will be joined aboard soon. And if you have a question or comment for Aziz, don't forget, all you got to do is make a call and use this number, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Simon Apple, I'm with you live from New York. Happy to have you with us. First of three episodes of Tumwabi Televised, this final full week of October 2023, 61 degrees top of the hour, or I should say coming near the top of the next hour here in New York. So get involved by phone or by chat room. And remember, we have two more episodes coming your way this week, Thursday and Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, starting time here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker Tune Radio. You can also catch me Wednesday at 11 a.m. on Sports Newswire in persona, Sports Grid Network's daily news information program hosted by Craig and crew. That's Sports Newswire, 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific on Sports Grid Network, available on smart TV sets, devices, Amazon Freevee, and other multi-channel bundles. Aziz, in terms of the programming, content, are you looking into things like children's family program? Because, you know, one of the ways that YouTube creators have distinguished themselves a lot has been programming for kids, programming for young adults. We're starting to see actually individual smart TV distributed channels featuring children's content.
Yeah, you know, and we're still a fairly small company, so, you know, at some point we will look into those programming. We want to walk before we run, and we believe we can, you know, help the marketplace and bring diverse content creators first initially in these various categories. Down the road, absolutely, children's programming is going to be something that is of interest. But you can imagine YouTube doesn't do it very well, I do see a need there because of the fact that I have a 7-year-old daughter, and I don't let her watch YouTube because of the fact that there will be ads that are questionable running every time. But in our case, you know, we do want to get into that programming, but we believe we could still, you know, we need to fill a immediate need with young adults young adults and, of course, adults that we believe there's a major need today. And by the way, Android phones is actually, you can load the app on an Android phone today. So not just Android smart TV sets, but the Android phone, because obviously, as we know, a lot of viewing is happening not just simply on TV sets, but actually on the phones.
Mm-hmm. When we're talking creator-driven television, do the creators also have the opportunity to create the advertising and make it a match for the programs they do?
Absolutely. And what really kind of differentiates the process and the approach that we're taking, not only does Sabio have a platform that allows us to, you know, to basically distribute and create apps and then distribute this in Sabio TV, but we also have deeper analytics in App Science. And App Science really helps the creators because it's going to help the creators understand who their audience is a lot more transparently than they get from other places and a lot more detailed look at that. And then we certainly monetize that. So because we can, A, help obviously distribute the content, we can help provide analytics, the brands love it. And so going back to your question about, you know, are the creators able to create commercials that fit into that? Absolutely. But we also believe there's a different way to approach the model from a, you know, instead of the standard ad units that are currently exist in streaming TV, we're looking at a new approaches, including creative units that allow us to integrate with content. We're looking at all kinds of opportunities, including unique creative from the creators themselves.
Aziz, talk about that a little more. How do you see that working? What kind of unique approaches to advertising could we, the viewer, get from your network?
Yeah, so like, for example, you know, we are looking at some different applications, including the ability to automatically generate a Coke can within that actually streaming content itself. The ability to use, which we're already doing today, the ability to use QR codes to basically push messaging across. And so now you're looking at something, you see the QR code, you're going to focus in on that. You're going to use your phone to get that QR code, and now you have the ability to customize, you know, down in your hand, you know, whether it is clothing or car or some of these other products, you can do that. So the thinking is it's about engagement as much as it is about, you know, yes, look, the 15 and 30-second spots need to happen in some of these shows, but really what we believe is there's another level of engagement you can have, because what an advertiser is interested in is, excuse me, they're interested in engagement. And so that's really how, or obviously, as you know, which is something that's been done a lot of times with product integration, easy product integration that really the show is kind of set around a certain area or, you know, a certain set that has certain integrations already integrated into it. That's easy to do. So we're trying to rethink the way advertising is done instead of a intrusive 30-second spot that just, you know, comes at you that you're not connected with. But, you know, also one of the things...
Advertising Week here in New York, Aziz, and one of the big stories big developments coming out is that there is a big sense among major and small national advertisers alike that interactive television is happening. We are in the interactive decade, and part of that's going to be the ability to order products and services through advertising on various programming, as well as product integration of the content, especially now that we are reaching critical mass with smart TV sets and devices that allow you to use your voice, your body language, your voice remote to do that. Is that something you're looking at, interactive advertising, where, let's say, you see an ad, and you want to buy or either call for information about the product or you want to order the product or the service. And you do it with your voice using an Alexa or Google Assistant or some audio feature you do through the TV set or your voice remote or your body language to make it happen.
We have that capability today, but I think what a lot of these, you know, when you talk about interactive television, the missing component is understanding that consumer overall. And I think where we, our approach on this, and like I said, we do have that, all that functionality today. What we believe, though, is that you could have all the cool features for interactive TV, but unless you fully understand that consumer, it doesn't matter. Engagement is not going to be what you need. And now it's just simply, you know, a interactive distraction that you're having. So while we believe in, and we have it today, as I mentioned, the ability to have interactive components in a via TV, you have to understand most people, when they're watching TV, they have a phone right next to them. And so you're telling, you know, it has to be that function on that TV has to be so seamless, much easier than it is to your phone, to use on your phone to make it worthwhile. And I still, I'm not buying into that. I believe what happens is the data components you have and the understanding consumer, and if you're able to reach them in a cross-screen way, which is what we do, we have mobile IDs and CTV IDs that are cross-screened in the home. And so when we serve out an ad, for example, for an that's connected to a brand, working with potentially content and influencer, we not only understand that that household best, we can then serve out a ad both on that mobile phone and on that TV simultaneously. And you know, it's just, it's going to be hard for a consumer. Listen, I don't believe the even Alexa, as great as Alexa and Siri are, it's still hard to do some of these steps on TV from an interactive perspective. So my view on it is the fact that I think the data will really kind of move the needle as relates to interactivity, and that interactivity will continue being on your phone. That's where you're going to do a lot of the interaction between your TV and your and how you make most of your consumption be, how most of your consumption behavior takes place is via the phone versus the TV.
A number of the smart TV sets and devices, particularly Roku, have really started to make a mark in Spanish language lifestyle content, doing lifestyle programming, cooking, home remodeling, renovation, and so on and so forth. Have you looked into some of your new YouTube creators doing original content in Spanish?
Yeah, you know, and I think it's once again, it's pertinent to the marketplace. And like, I'm Indian descent, right? So I was born in India. I came here when I was 5. And if you serve out content to me in Hindi, which is the Indian language, I'm not going to really be receptive to it. I think a majority of even Hispanics living in the U.S. today, and I grew up in L.A., so I speak this from firsthand language. Majority of Hispanics or Indians or other nationalities do not want to consume a majority of their content. They go back and forth. They don't want to consume a majority of the content in that native language. What they want to see is an understanding of you from a consumer perspective, that you understand that, like, okay, great, there's nuanced element in that content that is of Hispanic culture, but is in English language. And I think that's really, I think too often organizations, including ad agencies, think it's okay to just check off the box and say, hey, you know what? I'm going to put this in Spanish language and I'm going to get to all these Spanish-speaking customers. Well, if you look at the numbers, statistically, older audiences tend, especially Hispanic, older audiences watch in Spanish language. Younger audiences actually go back and forth between content and language. And so, but they're primarily consuming in English language overall. And so with the exception of music, of course, music is the exception, but most of them are consuming in English language. So as we look at content and we look at diversity, and which is, you know, the standard for multiculturalism in the U.S. now, which is the majority in a matter of years, the way we look at it is the understanding of that consumer in that household, whether it's Hispanic, Black, Asian, the consumption patterns of that. And the data points we have help us kind of – the way we – you know, and the way we like to think of us ourselves is we are the Netflix, the analytics-driven version of Netflix for CTV OTT. We're putting a lot of insights. We have a lot of data that we look at in a privacy-compliant way that helps us understand what audiences are going to like and continue to like. And so we're in the early stages of this. I'm not going to, you know, make this out to be like we have a well-oiled machine just yet, but we've been building mobile data insights since 2015 and cross-referencing that with CTV device data. And so if you can imagine all of this coming together, it's giving us a deep understanding of the consumer in a bigger way.
Mm-hmm. I think before you go, give us one or two upcoming shows that are premiering, let's say, in the next month or so that you're very high on.
We have a cooking show that is, well, we have a travel show we're in the process of producing with some regional marketplaces. I actually, you know what, and I would love to tell you some of the shows. I actually don't have a list right now in front of me. I apologize. I should have had it. But we have a couple of shows that are currently airing right now, including a show that's focusing on cooking that is really kind of taking in the whole Hispanic skew of cooking. We have one that is focused on Asian cooking. We have a show that is focused, once again, My Happy Place. We have that. And really, those are the three shows that we're – and then Ami Desai is coming out with content that is really about self-help and beauty and care and things like that. So we will have – I mean, we're also – a publicly traded company, so we're going to be releasing some information on some upcoming shows fairly soon in the next couple of weeks. We got some exciting things in the pipeline and more to come. But, you know, really, Art, and just to be very transparent, we wanted to really just start the testing of the process of these shows, which is we just started, like I said, a month ago, and then we'll be adding on to these additional shows in the next coming months. But most likely you'll see a brand-new slate of shows coming February of next year for us.
And when that slate happens, we would love to have one or two of the creators of those shows on our program. So let's extend the invitation ASAP. In the meantime, if you want to catch Savio TV on a TV set, you go to, at this moment, TV sets with Android TV as the operating system. It's also running on Android phones as well. And then we'll let you know as we go on and get more details about Savio, what new smart TV sets and devices the service will be running on. For more details about the service online, here's where you do go, www.savio.tv.com. It's www.savio.tv.com. Aziz Ramchula, thank you so much for coming on. Congratulations on getting the service off the ground. And I have a hunch that this is the beginning of a very exciting television dimension for the industry overall and for viewers all over the place.
Thank you, Simon. Appreciate the time and opportunity.
All right, let's stay in touch. Thanks again, Aziz. Take care. Have a super week ahead.
You too.
Aziz Ramchula joining us live from Los Angeles. Coming up next, our new classic trivia question, stand by, five prizes in play, and we'll bring that question to you after we bring you this from BlendJet. If your blender is bulky and a super pain to operate, give BlendJet the opportunity to make fresh smoothies, shakes, or mixed drinks an easy pleasure. Whether it's, you know, BlendJet is so portable to work up a smoothie at the office or your favorite protein booster at the gym or a poolside margarita. Any poolside will do. It's quiet to operate and rechargeable on the go. So what are you waiting for? Go to BlendJet.com and grab yours today and be sure to use the promo code TELEVISED to get 12% off your order. And get this, free two-day shipping. That's 12% off your order and free two-day shipping when you use the promo code TELEVISED. Blend anytime, anywhere with BlendJet. Now time for our brand new classic trivia question, and we have the most prizes we've ever offered for a single classic trivia segment. Five. That's right, five in play. We have got our two classic CDs of music, the Chicago Greatest Hits with songs like If You Leave Me Now, Feeling Stronger Every Day, the Lifetime Women in Rock CD with terrific performances like Cyndi Lauper and Michelle Schacht, Laura Branigan, Bananarama, The Pretenders, Pat Benatar. We've got the AMC Network's Uber Card. We've got the wonderful best-selling book by former TWPD guest that is running the show, Tells from the Inside. And we now have a free Redbox movie night card from the folks at Crackle Connect that were giving this out during Ad Week New York. A free Redbox movie night up to $6 value at any kiosk or on-demand Redbox place. And that all can be yours if you have the answer to this question. Name the 1990s USA Network series about a California-based beach bike patrol. Name the 1990s USA Network series about a California-based beach bike patrol. They patrolled Santa Monica. And if you know the answer, all you got to do is email me, SimonApple04@yahoo.com. It's SimonApple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to enclose your name and where you're emailing from. If you're first with the correct answer, you win. And if we don't get a winner by the end of today, we'll post the question tomorrow morning, Tuesday morning, on Facebook and Twitter, or X. Facebook at Simon Applebaum, X or Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. I want to welcome Showman James into our chat room. He's got the big yellow thumbs up. Thank you, Showman, for coming in. If you have a question or comment for our next guest, put in the room and make the call, 646-652-2906. Once again, the question, name the 1990s USA Network series about a California-based beach bike patrol. If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. In order to win, you got to play in, so do so. And all the very best. We have time at the end of our final 30 minutes. We'll bring you the question one more time. When we come back to Los Angeles we go, and we're going to be speaking with the executive producer and director of the new Peacock series, John Carpenter's Suburban Screams, Jordan Roberts. He'll be with us live as we pause at the top of the hour for web identification. You're hearing www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, and tunein.com, together reaching over 90 million listeners around the world every month and growing. We're going to check out one of BTR's best programs every week. It's the Independent Music Showcase. If you want to be caught up on the best in new music, check out the Independent Music Showcase. Comes your way Wednesdays, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. And don't forget, Best BTR coming your way at the Best of BTR coming your way at YouTube.com. There we go. Welcome back to our final 30 minutes of Tomorrow Be Televised on this Monday afternoon. Welcome to those of you just joining us at the top of the hour. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York. 61 degrees, top of the hour here in the Big Apple. We're expecting a wonderful, sunny, gorgeous week all week long with maybe 75 degrees or higher by Thursday or Friday. We have one more great guest coming your way on our program during this half hour, and we invite you to be part of the program, especially those of you just joining us. So give us a call, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. Number is good anywhere you're calling us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio, speaker, or TuneIn Radio. Don't forget our chat rooms in business. Showman James already in the room with the yellow thumbs-up sign. So join him. It's SimonApple04. That's the name of the chat room. You'll find it at the homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And, oh, yes, this half hour is brought to you by Cure, the instant drink mix that naturally boosts your ability to live to the max. This is the time of year where we get all sorts of Halloween programming. Classic films, original scripted series, new shows as well, unscripted as well. We got Chucky back for a new round on USA and Sci-Fi Season 3. Don Mancini, by the way, the creator of Chucky, was on our show a year ago. You can check that out at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And now Peacock is bringing the wonderful magic of one of the great horror and great film directors, period, of recent generations, John Carpenter, to life in a brand new series that premiered earlier this month called John Carpenter's Suburban Screams. Joining us live from Los Angeles, another interview exclusive, executive producer and director of the series, Jordan Roberts. Jordan, happy to have you here.
Great to be here, Simon.
So what's been the reaction so far to your and John's series?
Well, it's been pretty exciting. You know, I think people are watching it and getting it. You know, the critics can be a little polarized, but that probably means we're doing something right.
Why is it polarized? What's bringing that on?
Well, I think the breaking a new genre when something, you know, is rooted in truth but also has all the cinematic work in it and blending them all together to give a frightening experience where the truth enhances the horror. I think horror movies sometimes get, you know, a wide range of reviews any way you look at it. The good ones are great and the bad ones are terrible.
You and John and everybody involved in this Peacock series are out to blend two genres together, the true crime genre and the horror genre. How did you and John and your crew come up with the idea, and what's it been like to make this marriage happen?
Yeah, I mean, I was brought onto the series. John was connected. I've always been a huge fan of John Carpenter, obviously. You know, I've studied his films. I grew up with his films. I studied them in film school, and I watched them over, you know, again, obviously, now. So I really, you know, was able to digest that language and hopefully bring some of, his DNA across every episode. You know, true crime, you know, people are fascinated with it, and what's scarier, you know, than something that's true? And if it happens in your neighborhood, what's scarier than that? So, you know, we tried to play into that and give the audience experience where, you know, that fear kind of, you know, brings an entertaining ride, but also makes you think a little bit because this stuff's real.
What do you want people to think about when they see an episode?
You know, it depends on the episode, but I think, you know, the entry point of, you know, of horror and eliciting that kind of, you know, the emotion of fear, you know, under that emotion, you know, comes the human experience, I guess. I'm getting a little profound for my little horror series, but, you know, I think that's why filmmakers gravitate towards it, because you're eliciting such a strong primal emotion at the get-go, and then all the other stuff kind of, you know, you're able to pepper in there and people can think of it.
When I read about this series, one thing that hit me, you know, Jordan, is that each episode takes place in what some might people think would be a perfect utopia. You know, it's the suburbs, clean streets, sunny skies, everybody seems to be in fair shape. The lawns are nice and neat. The houses are gorgeous. And yet there's something lurking. It's like something's ready to blow over into the neighborhood.
Yeah, I mean, that's you know, working with, you know, the title alone, Suburban Screams, right? So, you know, I'm looking out of my home office right now. I don't know what's going on in the houses next door, and it's always been something that artists and filmmakers have liked to kind of dig into and explore. So it's like, yeah, it's like you live in these kind of peaceful places, but what's your neighbor up to? And that's a curiosity and also quite frightening.
Mm-hmm. So what are some of the cases that we've seen so far? And how when you decide to dramatize a particular, or to give us the full picture of a particular case, what kind of research is done? When do you determine, all right, we're going to have this interview plugged in, we're going to have this scene reenacted, and so on?
Yeah, I mean, it's a big research process. I mean, we field hundreds and hundreds of stories, and we want to make sure that there's, you know, some sense of, like, truth to it, believability, or even, you know, newspaper or footage, you know, that we can actually tap into to corroborate it, and other, you know, participants besides the lead storyteller. We don't shy away from paranormal, and we don't shy away from crime. So that's unique about this. You know, I don't think there's been a series where you're kind of, you know, doing true crime and ghost stories in the same place, but when they're all kind of brought together by suburbia, it just makes sense. When we all agree that this is a cool story, an interesting story, we're all curious and fascinated about, we interview that participant. I interview them extensively. I mean, 5 hours per session, and then take that interview and transcribe it and edit it a bit to understand kind of the ballpark storytelling, and then write what's to be shot like any sort of movie or, you know, television series we shoot it. That happens on this particular case. Actually, we shot most of it in Prague.
And when it comes to, you know, mixing in the home footage, the archival footage, and all of that, how do you try to do this in a cinematic way? Not only cinematically, but arresting to the viewer.
Yeah, I mean, you know, all of that stuff's a big part of the experience. The episode I directed, A Killer Comes Home, just happened to have all this amazing, well, not just happened, it was a big story. It was in Canada, in some suburbs there in Miramichi, and there was all this news footage. And also the entry point of the two, of the storytellers were the guys that ran the local newspaper. And a murder happened. They hadn't experienced a murder in that town, you know, in anyone's memory. So it really put the town, you know, into fear and chaos. And then the killer ultimately, from that murder, escaped and returned to his hometown to terrorize it. I mean, there's some spoilers here. Sorry, but it's unbelievable. It's the premise of Halloween, of the original Halloween. It really is, and that was mind-blowing. So, you know, incorporating everything that we can find in an artistic way. Sometimes, you know, sometimes we do some play with motion effects and graphics and this and that, you know, to keep it kind of moving and within the tone of the show. And sometimes we'll just lay it out raw and real to give that flavor and effect.
We're talking about John Carpenter's Suburban Screams, the brand new Peacock semi-scripted series that deals with things weird. And true crime bump in the night kind of tales, too, involving the Halloween Master and other people, too. We're going to talk about more about the episode John Carpenter did, and there were other directors, too, that got their shot as well. We'll talk about that as well. And we're talking about all of that with the executive producer and director of at least one episode, Jordan Roberts. The show is running on Peacock, available on smart TV sets, device, and multi-channel bundles, and in some cases, through your local cable operator. Jordan joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. Great to have you with us, kicking off your week on a Monday afternoon. Simon App, I'm with you live from New York, 62 degrees at the top of this hour, and we invite you to be part of the program. It's very simple to do. Just invite yourself to a phone and make a call with this number, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. First of three episodes we are doing this week, program all about TV's current and future. Back with you at 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific on Thursday and Friday. We're working on a bunch of guests for those episodes, so keep tuned to our Facebook and our wonderful X or Twitter feeds. Facebook, of course, is Simon Applebaum. X or Twitter, UBC Simon, CWET. And you can be in the know about the guests we are having the rest of this week and beyond. Right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Jordan, what was the episode that John Carpenter decided to direct himself?
He really responded to an episode called Phone Stalker, where a woman named Beth has been, you know, terrorized by an unknown entity through her technology, her phones, her computers, and all of that. And he just immediately gravitated towards it.
Hmm. Now, were all the episodes done in Prague, or did you do any episodes produced here in the United States or Canada or
you know,
elsewhere?
We did all of the the interviews here in the States. I'd love to shoot more in the States. You know, this is one of the, you know, kind of, you know, things that are is difficult about our business sometimes, and sometimes you got to go out. But we did do all of the interviews here, and we'd love to do more shooting here in the States.
Mm-hmm. Now, in addition to John yourself, you have at least two other people who got their shot at playing director. Who are they, and how did you pick them?
Yeah, Michelle Latimer is wonderful. I had worked with her during my days when I was launching the Vice TV network once upon a time, not that long ago. Anyway, she's a fabulous director. She does both scripted and documentaries, and she champions various causes, and she's just, and then in her scripted work, she show ran and directed, and she's a good friend and just a really talented director.
Mm-hmm. And then you have another person, Jazz.
Yeah.
If I mispronounce that, I apologize.
Jan Pavlovsky. He's from Czech. And worked with me on my Haunted series, three seasons on Netflix. Also, just crazy talented visual director. I mean, he knows how to move the camera. Everything's in his, you know, he just lays it right out and has a unique style to bring to the table. Super collaborative, and always he directed the Bunnyman episode, which I think is the standout. Michelle directed House Next Door and Cursed Neighborhood, and Jan also did Kelly, the first, I believe, episode that Peacock laid out. So, yeah, both wonderful directors.
Mm-hmm. Well, did Jan give any ground rules to everybody about how to approach the subject matter, how to make it as cinematic as possible, how scary to make it?
John talks, people listen, you know. When John talks, he's heard. So, yeah, I mean, I think the cinematic language, you know, comes from his films. It speaks for itself. But, you know, John you know, certainly on the episode he directed, was 100% in control, collaborative, you know, to, you know, along the way. But, you know, listen, it's John Carpenter. I'm not – John's going to do John, and he did an amazing job. And I think by that and watching him and being on set with him and the other directors, also getting to see what he does and how decisive he is and how, you know, we've watched his films but we haven't seen him in action. So it was a real, real pleasure, a great learning experience. And I think we all borrowed, you know, from seeing him do his thing and knowing his films to bring across our episodes.
And we should point out that in addition to being an executive producer and directing an episode, he also brought original music to the table.
He did. He did. He did the theme song, and he did all original music on Phone Stalker. And, it just brought that thing to life. I mean, it's funny. It's like you watch something like The Shining, and you turn off the music, you know, and it's not scary, and that's one of the scariest movies of all time. And, you know, I was, along the way watching John's episode, I'm like, okay. And then he put down that score, and it was like, okay, that's John Carpenter. Now I get it.
You mentioned that at least one of the episodes deals with a paranormal situation or a psychic phenomena situation. And when you said that, it hit me one step beyond. I am a big fan of that series, what John Newland did in the original. I also saw The Next Step Beyond, which did not last that long for a lot of reasons, only one season. And it just seems to me that there's this whole world of psychic phenomenon that certainly has grown since that last original one step in 1961, 62, that maybe something like your series could tackle.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you know, people, I think something like 80% or 90% of people in America believe in some sort of like spirits or paranormal activity. It's pretty high up there. So, you know, to tap into that is, you know, it's interesting because we got to do it through the suburban lens, through the Carpenter lens, and also, you know, with validated, with corroboration. My series Haunted was almost entirely supernatural type stories. I think people are more willing to talk about this stuff and not feel like they're crazy. So I think that's part of, you know, why you're seeing a little more of it and why people are consuming it so much.
If you have a question or comment in our remaining minutes with Jordan Roberts from John Carpenter's Suburban Screams, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. And coming up before we leave you, we will have a tribute to one of the most influential executives of Warner Brothers Television. His name is Ed Blyer. And what he did there really changed the face of Warner Brothers and changed the face also of the way we are at with television today. I had the chance to meet him several times in the course of his career, and I'll tell you about that with some reflections before we leave you at the bottom of the hour. And if we have a chance, we will also one more time give you our new classic trivia question with five prizes in play. When you think about this, by the way, have you heard back from any of the subjects that you interviewed? What do they think about what you and John and everybody have done?
Yeah, you know, I try to prepare everybody for the good, the bad, and the ugly, you know, when it comes to, you know, sharing stories and being on TV and, you know, today's culture, you get a lot of, you know, you got a lot of haters and you get some love, you know, and that's just the way it is these days. Carlette, left me a beautiful voicemail, and I spoke with her. She was in the Cursed Neighborhood episode and was just so, like, she just felt like it brought closure, and she liked the execution, and it really made my job all worth it. It was like a big hug, and she's living in England now. So that always feels good because, you know, we're telling people's stories. They're vulnerable, and I try just to be as transparent and, you know, and always available as I can along the way.
Was there a case a situation that you could not do in this first batch of episodes. If you get a second season, you will.
I mean, absolutely. I mean, we killed lots of stories, and we killed tons of them. You know, it's mostly due to, you know, time, schedule, research, making the contacts, finding the people, all of that. You know, we're making TV, so we have to fit into a certain, like, time range. So we've got, I'd say, 8 to 10 stories that are fantastic already up for bat if we're so fortunate to get a season two.
Mm-hmm. Also, has this project kindled John's interest in maybe doing more television on a regular basis, whether it is more seasons of this or a different show, a different unscripted show or a scripted show at some point?
I hope so. I mean, he seems pretty jazzed, you know. He had a lot of fun on set. I know he's, you know, really into his music right now, but I think he's got some, like, films in the works. I know everyone's open and excited about a potential season two on this. And who knows what's up for, you know, John. I mean, John's an artist, and he moves, you know, by the beat of his own drummer. And let's hope we ignited a little something, and then we'll see some more from him.
And what about yourself? What's next for you in terms of television, no matter where things go with this project?
Yeah, well, there's this one. I've got a couple others, you know, in development that are very close, you know, stepping into, you know, it's more of this hybrid stuff and also fully scripted stuff. And I'm also looking to get into a feature film once all these the last strikes iron themselves out. So I've got a full plate here and stoked and using kind of suburban screens to, you know, it's a good launching pad. I think it's a solid series. I think people will see something a little different than they're used to seeing in the genre. And I want to do more of that. And I want to do, you know, just more. So a very, very full plate, at least 4 projects on the table and psyched and grateful, to be in this position.
And finally, before you go, Jordan, what do you think of the whole genre of hybrid scripted? Where do you see that going? Do you think this is going to expand? Whether I know we've had efforts in science fiction. I remember the Mars Project that was done on National Geographic television.
Yep.
Ran 2 seasons, which also combined a ongoing scripted drama with actual interviews with people looking at the colonization of Mars.
Yeah, the Mars thing was a cool kind of statement. I think I think we can, you know, we can integrate stuff, you know, learning from that. I like the Mars series. I see ways to do this, you know, and I think people are starting to catch on to it and enjoy it, you know, for what it is, where we can take it to, you know, I think we're already doing a premium level, but I think sky's the limit here. I think it creates a really, if you're really smart about it, and you find ways where the truth enhances the fiction or the scripted and vice versa, or the truth enhances the scripted, I would say, because I guess it's all based on truth. I think it's a unique experience. I think it's a new genre, and I think you're going to start seeing more and more money put behind it, which gives us a chance to spread our wings and do really great stuff. That does go into science fiction. It does go into horror. It does go into crime. It could go into just about any, you know, any kind of already, you know, made genre, and create something new where this truth affects your experience of entertainment. It's new to me. I feel like there's foundation, you know, with documentaries or even something like Mars, but I think we can do something bigger. I think we already are, and I think you're going to see studios and networks putting more money behind them.
You can catch John Carpenter's Suburban Screams right now on Peacock, available on smart TV sets, smart devices, multi-channel bundles, and in some areas your local cable operator. For more details about the program and the service online, go to www.peacocktv.com. That's www.peacocktv.com. JohnCarver.com. Jordan Roberts, executive producer, director on John Carver's The Bourbon Screams. Thank you for joining us. Congratulations on season one. Hopefully many more to come. And we'd love to have you back in terms of new projects you're working on. It's been great to have you with us.
Thanks for having me. I really enjoyed talking with you. Keep it up.
Same here, Jordan. Take care. Have a super week ahead. All the greatest.
All right. Take care now. Bye.
You too. Jordan Roberts from John Carpenter's The Bourbon Screams joining us live from Los Angeles. I'll be back in a moment with some wonderful thoughts about an amazing executive named Ed Blyer and why you should know about him. First, a message from the people at Cure. Ever wonder what makes you fatigued or tired at times? Try dehydration. It's a leading cause of headaches, brain fog, and muscle weakness. Luckily, there's a way to bounce back, and that way is Cure, C-U-R-E. It's a clean, tasty, effective way to stay hydrated and operate your best. Cure's instant drink packets, when you mix them with water, contain a balance of electrolytes and glucose, while free of artificial flavors, sweeteners, and preservatives. Cure is all natural and perfect to deploy on the go at work or in your very own home. Try Cure today and feel the difference for yourself. Use the promo code TELEVISED for 20% off your order. That's the promo code TELEVISED, T-E-L-E-V-I-S-E-D. For more details, go to curehydration.com. When you can be part of a field like television, or any field, not just for a month, a week, a year, a couple of years, or decades, if you can be big in decades, you find people that inspire you and that inspire others. And they're not just your normal executives. And Ed Blyer was one of them. He died on October 17th, one day after he celebrated 94 years on Earth. He started his career in the 1950s with WABC-TV here in New York in ad sales, then became one of the key executives at ABC Television, where he made his mark in daytime and children's program with shows like Discovery, the award-winning science program for young people, as well as being an innovator behind the scenes in having diversity on soap operas like General Hospital and others. For 35 years after that, starting in the 1970s, he was one of the key forces at Warner Brothers Television. And it was at his time there that he made cable television happen. He was one of the first Warner Bros., one of the first television studios under his tenure to sell to programming to cable operators and to cable networks. And at the same time also got involved in the development of services like MTV, Nickelodeon, and the Movie Channel, one of the first pay television networks. Ed Blyer was somebody I met at many conferences over the years and the decades, and he always had something to say. He always had something challenging to talk about for the industry to do. And he was someone who sometimes could be gruff, sometimes challenge you, but he always was thoughtful and erudite and a pleasure to know and a pleasure to learn from. He was one of those very, very special executives, and he will be profoundly missed by anyone who believes that television can be the medium that it can be and is. Edward Blyer passed away October 17th at the age of 94. And I know that my good friend Shelley Palmer has more to say about that. You can check out his website for more wonderful things that Ed Blyer did, including what he recently talked about in the area of artificial intelligence before he passed away. Thanks to our guests for being here, all of you for tuning in. We'll be back on Thursday. And in the meantime, check us out on podcast as well as at blogtalkradio.com/televised and our website, tomorrowbetelevised.com. Tomorrow Be Televised was brought today by Cure, the instant drink makes that naturally boosts your ability to live to the max. By Laird Superfood, plant-based coffee creamers and other products that fuel you from sunrise to sunset. And by BlendJet, the portable blender letting you make fresh smoothies, shakes, or mixed drinks on the go wherever you go. Remember, if you want to make a contribution to the Israel Emergency Fund, here's where you go, ujafedny.org, ujafedny.org. The contribution is greatly appreciated, and we appreciate you as well. But tomorrow we televise. I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for your listening. Have a great rest of your Monday. Back Thursday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, you know where, Live Talk Radio, SpeakerTune Radio, and all of our web and podcast destinations. Whatever you're up to between now and then, please stay safe, please be great, and say a prayer for the people of Israel and all in the Middle East. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.